Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a series interviewing growers, entrepreneurs, educators, and technologists who are inventing new solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges on the farm. Brought to you today by the Western Growers Association, supporting growers that grow the best medicine in the world. Find out more at WGA.com. Now here's your Voices of the Valley host, Director of Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology, Dennis Donahue.
Welcome back for another edition of Voices of the Valley. I'm joined by my good friend and partner, Candace Wilson. Candace, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dennis?
Doing great. And we have a, you know, all our guests are special, but this is an episode you and I have been looking forward to have a chance to visit with this young man. And sadly, they're young men to these days, all are young men to me these days, more and more. But please welcome CEO and co-founder of Bear Flag Robotics, who's been in the news a little bit lately, Egino Caffiero. Egino, how are you?
Doing great, Dennis. Candace, thanks so much for having me. This is a thrill to connect and chat.
Yeah, no, we're looking forward to it. You know, obviously, you know, I mentioned you're in the news and you've had a successful exit with John Deere, and we can talk a little bit about that later. I think what I'm most interested in is just that entrepreneurial journey. And so, first of all, fill us in a little bit about your background, and then vision, problem you wanted to solve. And, you know, and I say this a little tongue in cheek, but, you know, having exited, so to speak, did all this go exactly according to plan? So there's a lot to get started with. But
Let's go. Yeah, from the back. Tremendous result. Certainly we couldn't be happier, but you know, as startups go, you know, it's always a little bit, you know, more chaotic under the covers than I think anyone wants you to know. It's startups are exceedingly difficult, no easy days, tremendous amounts of uncertainty. And to have a result where we can continue on our mission and having the backing of the market leader, we just couldn't be more pleased. This is exactly where we want to be right now, without a doubt. So I'll back into all those questions, Dennis. I think the most important thing to lead with, as always, is just mission and vision, right? So the mission of Bear Flag Robotics is to reduce the cost of growing food while increasing global food production through machine automation. And that's a mouthful. There's a lot there, but it really defines, you know, what we do, why we do, and how we do it. There's a lot of ways to drive those outcomes, and we do it through autonomous technology. And so that's why we're so excited. And really, to further your point about, like, is this what we wanted for the company? Absolutely. The driving force for me and my co-founder, Aubrey, was really to have the most impact possible. And we knew, hey, listen, Bearfly can IPO, and that's going to be a long march. But if there's an opportunity sooner to have that impact and really multiply the goodness that we've created, we're always open to that. And so, you know, we've known John Deere since basically the start of Bear Flag, got to know them, developed personal and professional relationships with their team. And when they came to us earlier this year and said, hey, listen, like, we've been massively impressed and we'd like to work together. Would you be interested in joining forces? You know, it was a no-brainer for us. We said, absolutely.
Well, you know, we've known you at the center since really almost our inception these last 5 or 6 years. And we, you know, as I like to tell folks, look, Bear Flag did all the work, but we were delighted that they became a part of the center, and the things they asked us to do, we were able to contribute. And so I mentioned that one because we were happy to contribute, and we were cheering for you all along. But it has been 5 or 6 years. So kind of take us back to one, how you and Aubrey got together, because I mean, she's terrific and I've worked with her as well. And I was always struck by you had a mission that was a little bigger than just the company. So a cause and a mission that seems like that probably helps get through, as you say, you know, there's a lot more going on under the hood than people realize in terms of long days and short nights and all that good stuff. But what brought you two together? And you know, you've worked so well together over the last several years. So how did you get together on this?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the things. And when you just talk startup, and we don't need to talk ag tech or, you know, robotics or anything like that, but basically just founding a company, I think one of the reasons that Aubrey and I have worked so well together is certainly not because we see things the same way, which we rarely do, but rather that we've known each other for so long. And we have a tremendous amount of trust. So Aubrey and I met back in undergrad at Carnegie Mellon almost 20 years ago. We're both engineers. You know, quickly about Aubrey, she left CMU to go work in space technology, building augmented reality for satellite production lines. Later went into business consulting. She got her MBA at Chicago Booth, and she founded her first company while she was there. And then we joined forces for Bear Flag. I went to Stanford for grad school, got my master's in electrical engineering, founded my first company out of my dorm room at Stanford, ran that for a number of years, and then had the immense privilege of joining another startup back up here in Northern California. And as I was thinking about my next moves, I completed my MBA at the Wharton School. But during that time, had a chance to really think about what I want to do next in my life, and really where my calling was. Aubrey and I, you know, we love the impact that we're able to have at Bear Flag, and that was really the nexus for where Bear Flag was founded. So the personal attachment to this story, my in-laws are in construction aggregate mining. And so I was spending the summer of 2015, 2016 up there with them, learning more about their operations. It's the exact same thing, Dennis, you see in agriculture, right? These folks own their land. They've got their equipment paid off. They just can't find labor at wages that make sense for their operation. And so as I was up there, we started to connect the dots and we started looking at other industries. So, obviously like construction and trucking, mining, marine applications. But early in our journey, I was introduced to a walnut grower, up in Wheatland, California, and went up and spent a day on that farm. And that's really what just opened our eyes the most broadly. We spent the summer of 2017 talking to growers all over the country. So this is everything from tobacco farmers to citrus, obviously, leafy greens, berries, sweet corn, like you name it, corn and soy, alfalfa. And Aubrey and I recognize that, hey, this labor problem is persistent across all these types of crops. It looks a little bit different, but hey, if we take the most universal tool, really the jackknife of farming, which is a tractor, and add intelligence to that to increase the productivity of the workforce that still exists there, we can have a tremendous amount of impact. And that's what we've been doing.
And in that same vein, can you tell us a little bit about just the first product concept, how the pipeline has evolved, and kind of just some of those learnings? And I would be particularly interested in also hearing about like the uniqueness of crops and how you've had to make adjustments depending on which crop you're working with.
Yeah, Candace, it's such a fantastic point, of course. And not to embarrass Dennis, but like one of the very first calls we made was to Dennis. And we came down and we met with him and spent the day. We got burritos across from the Innovation Center. I remember that specifically. And I'm getting his perspectives on what ag and Salinas looked like and what some of the challenges were. And then Dennis was an early facilitator in those first grower conversations. And what started with, Aubrey and me driving out to go, talk with someone, like we'd drive 3 hours to go talk with someone for 20 minutes in their yard and then drive home and like debrief the whole way about what we saw and what we heard and doing that over and over again. And then those same conversations were the first customers where we had a little side-by-side with some, sensors on it that we would take out. We gave some growers rides on autonomous equipment out, in their orchards and in their fields. And, really the story here is about being as close to customers as early as possible. I think we were out there tremendously early. We had, products that, a tractor that barely worked. I'm really stringing it together. And still, I don't think we were out there early enough. There were still opportunities where we could have got out there earlier and accelerated our learnings. It was really the story here from a startup perspective. Once again, this isn't ag and this isn't robotics. This is about just getting your MVP out to customers as early as possible so you can really define where that product needs to go.
So it sounds like product development, from your perspective, just simply can't work without customers as co-developers in the process.
Oh, that's exactly right, Dennis. Like, absolutely. What we always say is the most important thing. It's not what we say, it's just the truth. Product market fit is the most important thing for a company, right? You can overcome so many bad things that will happen on your startup journey. But if you don't have product market fit, it doesn't matter how many smart people you have. It doesn't matter how much funding you have. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. That product's just not going to make it. That company is not going to make it. And so it's a constant evolution to make sure that you have that product market fit. And to that point, what we do say is product market fit isn't a point, it's a journey. And throughout the history of Bear Flag, we've been far away or more close to that line. But it's always about being as close to that line as possible. And the only way to ground truth that line, the only way to know that you're actually on that line is by working with growers, right? And it's way before the product's ready and it's way before it's ready to actually do real work. But it's about like, there's a difference. And you know this as well as I do. When the eyes light up and they're like, holy smokes, this will work. Like, this is going to change the way I think about what I'm able to do versus this is cool, but this is neat, but you should talk to the guy down the road. He's really sort of into new technology. And when he says that, that you're not on that line.
So question for you, because I was chatting with, a pretty fair venture player in another country, but we were talking about market entry and a desire to get close to growers sooner rather than later. But he basically said, growers typically are more used to, you know, like Candace's alma mater, Bayer. Here's the finished product, as opposed to they don't necessarily know how the sausage is made in the kitchen. So you have to really manage their expectations. We're doing something new and exciting, but it's going to take a while. Was it difficult to get growers to kind of buy into that concept?
Yeah, tremendously so, right? Tremendously so. These aren't growers or these aren't businessmen that enjoy just trying out new gizmos, right? They have a job to do. They have extreme pressures from the market, from the weather, from their labor force. They don't have time to screw around here, right? They have a job to get done. And so being able to get their opinions and take their time was exceedingly important, right? And it's built on relationships. It's, you know, people do business with people, and there has to be this fundamental level of trust that, hey, Bearfly is going to get there and we're going to make good on what we say we can do. A huge part of that was when we come out and we say we do a job, we always finish the job, right? And it didn't matter if we needed to drive the tractor. It didn't matter what needed to happen. It didn't matter if we needed to stay out there till 2 a.m. in some cases, but we got it done. And very humbly and very modestly, I think we've built a pretty strong reputation in Salinas and in California for a startup that's ag first. We get the job done. We're not going to get in your hair and we're not going to disappear. And you're always going to hear from us. And I think that served us really well.
Everything that you just described is the feedback that, you know, you hear over and over again, this buzzword of ag tech that's been around for years now. You get growers in a room and they're like, I don't know, somebody from the Silicon Valley shows up on my farm, then I never see them again. They'll be back in a couple of years. So it sounds like that, keeping your head down and working till 2 a.m. is like speaking a farmer's love language. So
no, Candace, that's exactly right. You know, there's this story, right? I think you've heard it too, but just add some more color. The startup arrives and they're all wearing loafers and they takes like 6 hours to like unload the robot and then another 4 hours to set it up. And then they get halfway down the row and it doesn't work. And they're like, we'll be back tomorrow. And it's, right. You know, it's deuces. They don't see them again. Right.
Exactly.
That gives startups a really bad name. And it really sort of like throws a wet towel on the appetite of a grower to work with the company. And to that extent, I would like calling out our ops team. These are the finest ag professionals that I've ever worked with who are able to, despite their frustrations with our product and with our engineering team, they have an obligation to the grower and to the community to do right by the grower. And I just can't say enough about the success of the company, thanks to our operations team.
Go back to, you mentioned you, because I remember clearly, you know, you're talking about, you know, going into the walnut groves and you're looking for, and, you know, and Western Growers is fresh fruits, vegetables, and nuts. So though occasionally I'm kind of, well, I'm a vegetable. I just got back from the Central Valley and hey, you guys are fruits and, you know, and I'm getting a tour of an almond deal next week so I can be more conversant on nuts. But what was your evaluation process in terms of where you ultimately settled, or are you able with your technology and now with the backing of Deere, will you be able to look at the whole spectrum of fresh fruits, vegetables and nuts? Or what was the decision-making process, and does your current product lean one way because you ultimately decided to plant your flag? Let's say, you know, obviously we see a lot of you in the Central Coast.
I mean, that's the beauty, like very, very humbly and very modestly. I think that's the really smart part of our approach here is that anyone that uses a tractor is a potential customer, right? Like we build technology that goes on tractors. We don't build the tractors themselves. We're not building the steel. We're not building the propulsion systems. And there's a lot of cool stuff happening in that area. We focused exclusively on this autonomy problem that can then be added to tractors to deliver value for growers, right? It's never been a, you know, an autonomy and story. It's always been like, we are focusing on solving this part of the problem because we think that this will be the most leveraged opportunity here to deliver value to all types of growers. And that can be a tree nut grower, that can be a citrus grower, that can be a veggie grower, that can also be a corn or soy grower.
So tell us more about how the equipment, can you tell us more about how it works? What kind of data is it collecting? How does this also fit into John Deere's long-term strategy? Like, why was that a perfect marriage?
Yeah, of course. So when you think about Bear Flag, right, we build autonomous technology for farm tractors. So like I said, we don't build the tractors themselves. We procure the machines. In the past, we've done it through Pacific Ag Rentals. We've also done it through other dealerships as well. And also, you know, eventually from our customers too. And that's really where we're going. We're going with this. But once we get the machine, we put on all sorts of perception sensors so it can see the world around it. And we put a ton of compute power onto this machine too, so that it can make sense of that. And then we connect to the internet so that you know, anyone from anywhere in the world can command and control their fleet of autonomous tractors. And it doesn't matter if it's a 5 series or an 8 series or some sort of like form factor that we don't even know exists yet, right? That we're building the ecosystem to give growers that control. So that's how it works. I think the most interesting thing here, Candace, when you think about Bear Flag, there's this obvious value prop helping with the labor availability problem. And I don't, like, your audience knows this, you know, in a more general audience, we talk about just how pressing this is, but I think the listeners here already appreciate at face value just how pressing the labor problem is. And we can help growers with that today. That is the nail in their head that they need help with, right? Like, that is the biggest pain point. But once we're there, what we really see is this landscape of opportunity to provide even more value. So it's things about like, how efficient are my machines? Like simple things like, hey, listen, if I know when this machine will be done, then I can already plan out what the operation looks like after that, where that machine goes. I can be more productive with my existing assets. Really cool stuff we're doing in the Central Valley. We're doing cultivating in crops, so in safflower, and we can look at things like canopy volume. If we did the tillage passes in the fall and in the spring, and now we're going through cultivating, we can relate, hey, this is what we saw with compaction in the fall and in the spring, and this is what we're seeing with plant crop growth here, you know, with this pass coming in, you know, April, May, June timeframe. Like, that's exciting. That's really cool because we're adding value on top of the simple labor savings. We're making this tractor even more valuable. And we're giving it like actionable insights, things that growers can actually use, not just data, but real insights back to growers. And that's what we're excited about.
What are the operational issues? I mean, we've just launched a program where we're focusing on skills for the next generation of ag workers in order to operate your products. Is that creating new opportunities, new jobs? And when you have more skills required, better wages, better working conditions, does it feed into all of that?
Without a doubt, right? Without a doubt. And so if you take, you know, as we know, there's not enough workers. And the existing workers are some of those valuable members of that staff. And so when Bearflag comes in and we can empower that worker to be not 10 or 20% more productive, but, you know, 3 or 400% more productive, that's huge. That's massive. And when I'm a worker on a farm and all of a sudden my output, you know, increased 3 or 4x, my value to my employer has increased that much too. And so this is really a rising tide. Like, workers can really justify not only simply higher wages, but better working conditions too. You're not bouncing around in a tractor all day. You can do your job, you know, in air conditioning. You don't have the physical strain, the wear and tear on your body running a machine for 18 hours straight. Right. This is what we're giving. Like, this is what we're excited about. This is the value that we're providing back up and down to all people that are, you know, ag workers.
Talk a little bit, you know, you mentioned, you know, go back to your mission statement and, you know, kind of your raison d'etre, as it were. Autonomous is obviously the heading here. So talk about that. I know there still are some practical challenges in front of, you know, autonomous, yeah. Particularly in California, though not limited to California. How do you see, kind of explain to the listener what that really means, and, you know, then some of the roadblocks that lie ahead of realizing that vision?
Yeah, I think it's less of what roadblocks exist, and it's more about what opportunities we go after. And when you look at the landscape, and when I make these, like, you know, broad sweeping claims that, you know, Bearflag can provide value to anyone that uses a tractor, that is true, but there's this long tail of work that a tractor does, right? Everything from a machine used at a dairy to a machine that, you know, works a soy field in the Midwest, right? These are exceedingly different applications of that same piece of steel. And so from our perspective, it's how do you maintain focus? So today we're doing tillage. We'll do your primary and secondary tillage. But really, how do we align ourselves narrowly to make sure that we're productive and we can hit our goals with also an eye to other opportunities as well? So it's not so much that there's any, like, given, like, you know, obstacle that we need to overcome. And if we can solve this one thing, like, it's going to unlock the world. Like, as you know, the ag landscape is vast and complicated, and there's a lot of challenges out there.
Well, I suppose I meant my obstacles, though I would love your observation about just kind of technology and how it's going to evolve in this space. And then, you know, you were a participant on the front end of our automation initiative. So just, you know, your general observation of how long things take, because you sure have some experience from then to now and then looking forward. But, you know, there still are some regulatory challenges around autonomy and that type of thing. But from a technical standpoint, I understand you're there from a practical standpoint in terms of it can be immediately applied. But is the regulatory environment improving? Is that still an issue? How do you view all that?
Yeah, specifically in California, there's the question of Cal OSHA, which is hotly debated. You know, Bear Flag took a stance on that this does not apply to highly automated vehicles. You know, I'm sure we'll revisit that with Deere, but our perspective on it is very clear. But also, too, hey, listen, like the fact that it doesn't apply means that there is a need for regulation here, right? There is a tremendous need to make sure that companies are developing safe, reliable equipment that doesn't put people in harm's way. And we are engaged and enthusiastic about developing that regulation hand in hand with, you know, with policymakers, because it is so important, right? I see, you know, candidly, I see a lot of spooky stuff out there. A lot of folks are building stuff without really a mind to how is this really going to keep people safe at scale? And it's troublesome. And I think there does need to be a regulatory body that ensures, you know, worker safety.
How do you engage with those people today?
Specifically with
the regulators, or, you know, I guess the broader question is more about how can we proactively address these things so you kind of have this freedom to operate?
I'll tell you what, one of the most surprising and helpful things that we learned, Candace, was our biggest advocates are the safety professionals at the farms we work with. So we work with some of the largest farms in California who have dedicated safety teams, right? So if your farm's 100,000 acres, you're going to have a whole team dedicated to safety. And working with those teams who already have very close relationships with the regulators and the enforcement arms of those, you know, regulators, because they're all interested in keeping folks safe. When they come to the regulatory body and say, hey, Bear Flag is going to help reduce our number of incidences, reduce our downtime and our downtime due to injury, you know, how can we make this work? That's, growers have been the biggest advocates there.
You mentioned you see a lot of scary stuff. But I think my question is, I kind of want to go back to also, you know, you've, you know, got a lot to be proud of and look forward with Bear Flag. So, and, you know, you're a young guy and Aubrey is, and assuming you're going to be at this for a while, how do you see technology around the automation space in general evolving on the farm? You know, like when we get the reports in all over the world, you know, if we're waiting for CP3O to, you know, take over anytime soon, it's going to be a bit more of a journey than people suspect. How's all this going to evolve in terms of automation and kind of broaden out beyond what you're doing in your mind?
Yeah, Dennis, I think you and I are probably aligned on this. We both dream of this future where, you know, robots, you know, just work the land and, you know, you walk up and the robot hands you your produce. But, you know, we both know that's a long way off. We will likely be farming on other planets before that comes reality. And that's not, it's actually not a slant on that technology. It's just an enthusiasm for the space, for space technology. But coming back to it, right, what we very clearly identified is we are building tools to help humans be more productive. This is not RoboCop. This is not C3PO. This is another tool for the grower to be more productive, to add certainty into their operation, give them more information to increase yields and lower the resources necessary to farm. Our approach has always been that the grower is the mastermind and central to that operation and not the other way around.
Yeah, it does seem, you know, the closer you get to all of this, you know, you do recognize you can quite comfortably make the case that, look, at the end of the day, we're enhancing productivity, improving working conditions, demanding in a good way, new skills required, but good news, you know, better compensation to come along with that. So, you know, it strikes me as it's got all the elements of win-win-win.
I couldn't agree more. And like, if we zoom out for a second here, one of the core advantages, and obviously we're building a worldwide solution, right? But like one of the core advantages here in the United States has been increasing the productivity index of workers through technology, right? And we see constant examples of this, and it's not just on the farm, right? This is in manufacturing, you know, as well, also in construction and mining, right? How can we do more with less resources? How can that human being affect more change, have more impact, deliver more value? And Bear Flag is an extension of that. How can that human, that single person that has 12 or, you know, 15 hours in their day, how can we increase, you know, their productivity output and hopefully create a safer, more enjoyable way for them to do that too?
You know, I had one of my favorite customers a couple of years ago. We were talking about the future of technology and we were actually doing a lot of just flying drones over his farms and collecting data and stuff, helping him understand predictive yield modeling and that sort of thing. He said, you know, I want to be sitting on a beach somewhere, Candace, and then I just want to have a report every morning, read through a report, decide which part of my field I need to send water, which tractors I need to be running that day, and just press a few buttons. And when I hear you talk, I'm thinking to myself, man, he wasn't so far off. Like,
yeah.
It's coming together.
Yeah, I think the only thing I will add to that, and it's not changing. It's only adding to it. I have a feeling that gentleman, if he's a grower, he'll find other things to do. Growers don't sit on beaches. They find things to do. And to that point, right, there's so much to get done. If we can, similar to that example, if we can offload things from his plate or her plate to allow that grower to be more effective and productive, that's what we want to do. I'm only making a joke because I don't know any growers that take long vacations. So,
it's true. Yeah. You have to push them.
Yeah. It's kind of like retirement, not in their vocabulary.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's true. They have a hard time letting go.
Yeah.
Is there something as you think about the future with you and John Deere, like what is most exciting for you? What is this opportunity bringing and what will that mean to the grower community?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on a team level, on a personal level at Bear Flag, there's a resounding enthusiasm that what we are doing will have the impact that we want it to have. And it will probably be sooner than we thought it would be. You know, startups are a thrill. And that's the cool thing about, you know, Western Growers Innovation, you know, centers that, hey, listen, like there's a place for startups, but it is a grind, right? It is existential, right? I was literally driving home. I got home from Iowa last night and I was driving home talking on the phone. And I was like, you know, it's great to be working in a company where I'm not afraid of running out of, you know, money here in a year, right? Like this company will be around next year. And it's that reassurance that, hey, the technology we've developed and the technology will develop and the team we've assembled will continue to have that impact. And it really truly is a starting line. You know, the work we've done is fantastic. We've gotten to the starting line where we can continue to deliver that value.
You know, just as, you know, as we kind of begin to finish up, I obviously there's John Deere and their strategy, your guys' strategy together. But, I want to go back in very personal terms. And, you know, a lot of folks have, you know, I see the roadmaps and the, you know, the landscape of all the startups, all the different buckets. So I'm sure folks are going to pick your brain a little bit. Any advice on this whole startup entrepreneurial journey? And then, you know, obviously, you know, you've had a successful outcome that I always tell everyone, you know, I always applied him as the patron saint of growers, the former heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Lewis, who once said, it's not that I like money so much, it's just that it calms my nerves. And so that's, and so I like good markets. So I always got Joe Lewis is the grower's guy, but you know, to the point you just made, hey, we can relax a little bit and focus on what we really want to do. But any advice for people who are in the game? And then the other question I have is, you know, and I kind of joked, hey, did this turn out exactly, you know, I wanted a 5-year plan and boom, I hit it right on the money. Or, I mean, was there ever a time that you and Aubrey were really like, this is a challenge?
Well, yeah. So the answer is yes, of course, it's startup, right? One of the things, and I want to do a blog post about this or something, right? You only hear about startups when things are going well. Like, you hear about the funding milestone, the new customer, and the exit, right? And there's this huge chasm of just dirt. There's just this huge chasm of awfulness between those, you know, happy announcements that you post on LinkedIn or you get in TechCrunch or a successful farmer or whatever, right? And those wins, as much as like we like to celebrate them, they don't last long, right? That win feels good for about 48 hours or 72 hours, and then it's back to it, right? And it really is daunting, right? It really is daunting. There's just so much uncertainty and so many variables and so many things that can go wrong, right? And to think that, hey, Bear Flag is just this like leaping from success to success to success, just couldn't be further from the truth. It's hard in the trenches, and I haven't talk to any successful entrepreneur that would disagree with that, you know, across any industry. You're building something that didn't exist under massive uncertainty. And sometimes there's a clear vision of where you want to go, but even then there's not really a clear path of how to get there. So it's a lot, there's a lot to it.
So perfectly said. You know, so I spent most of my career, the last 16 years, I was in the corporate environment and then decided to take this wild leap into the startup world myself. Yeah. And the way I describe it to my friends who are still in that corporate world is like, you really feel the wins and losses so much more. Like there's all of this energy and enthusiasm and yes, we had, you know, you achieved this milestone, but then on the flip side, you really, really feel the setbacks too. So it's such a roller coaster from an emotional perspective, but an exciting journey nonetheless.
Candace, I couldn't agree more. You really do eat what you kill, right? And as soon as you, more metaphorically speaking, as soon as you get that meal, you got to go out and, you know, get your next meal. And it's it doesn't stop.
Absolutely.
But that's exciting, right? I had a lot more hair and a lot less gray hair when I first talked to Venice 5 years ago, but wouldn't trade it. Fundamentally, I love what I do. I can't imagine doing anything different. there's no easy days. There's even now, even, you know, at Deer, right, we still have so much to do, but you know, there is an excitement to it that we have the resources to do it. But in startup land, there's no easy days. It's exceedingly daunting. It's exceedingly challenging, but fundamentally at its core, I love what I do and I love who I work with.
Well, I trust along with, you know, the dollar amount, you at least negotiated, hey, I don't do 2 a.m. anymore.
Oh, we still do 2 a.m.
You still do.
But I mean, that's the thing, man. When you do what you love, I mean, like, it is work. I'm not telling you it's rainbows and butterflies and it doesn't feel like work, but there's a purpose there. And you're not up at 2 a.m. because someone told you to be up. You're up at 2 a.m. because of the opportunity that gets you and where you'll be if you put in the hours. That's the exciting part. That's what we're excited about.
Well, I suspected if we had a conversation with you, there would be a lot of breadcrumbs of what it takes to succeed. And from the entrepreneurial standpoint, Candace, I think Dino and Bear Flag are a pretty good example of what the ag tech deal is supposed to be all about.
I agree. And, you know, Dennis, I was just thinking kind of how we started it off. Because they're part of the center, I think that you really need to come up with a plan on how to celebrate these sort of wins from your alumni.
Yep.
Don't you feel like there should be celebrations of some sort?
Well, we're working on that. You know, Gino, I'm still smiling. We'll have a big event and we need to make as big a splash as the day. I'll never forget you brought, I'm not quite sure what to call it, but it was really, really big. And you said, can I park this outside?
And we had a John Deere 6R right there in the, you know, on Main Street right in front of the
Starbucks.
Innovation Center. Yeah.
Well, and having been the mayor, I know how big our parking spaces are on the street. So it's like the only thing we had to work with was the yellow unloading zone across from the Taylor building. And they said, well, I think you can go over there and nobody will say anything. And then Gino turned into the world's best marketeer and hawker. I was like, here, come here and see this.
We got some customers out of that. We met some, I won't name his name on the podcast, get on permission to, but turned into one of our best customers from that day.
Well, that was the plans.
We
do what we can to help, and no, you're right. I mean, we certainly, but as I said earlier, I like to think we played our position in terms of what Gino and Aubrey needed us to do. But
yes,
as you can tell, just listening to Gino, that they had what it took in terms of product passion and commitment. And I think that's the lesson learned.
Yeah, I think the only missing piece there was an incredible team, Dennis. You know, startups, oftentimes you think about the engineers, but as you folks know, and as this audience knows, it's the ag folks that really got us there. Bear Flag is an ag first company. We're not a tech company. We're a farming company. And we, you know, let's not confuse those two things.
Well, it is a team sport. Just a quick question. You know, you mentioned your team. How big is your team?
So we're growing really quickly. We got coming up on low 30s as far as total headcount. Yeah.
Terrific. Okay, cool. Good. Candace, do you have any final
I just
final
wanted
questions?
To say, I mean, I feel like you've provided us with so much inspiration this morning and just such a great success story. So congratulations and good luck on the next chapter.
Yeah, he gets to do motivational speaking in the near future, I think. just in case if you need, you want to tell the story. You could even be a TED Talk someday.
It's kind of you to say. I mean,
yeah, no, truly, I've always enjoyed our relationship and conversations, and then your support of our initiatives as well. So from our perspective, that's been a team sport as well. I'll give you the final word before we sign off. Any final thoughts from you? And again, you know, certainly congratulations. I know all of Western Growers and the center is awfully proud of your accomplishment.
Dennis, thank you so much. Just to reciprocate that, I mean, it's been thanks to you and Western Growers that we're able to get to work so closely with farmers even before we really had any business doing that, as we talked about earlier. And it's a massive credit to you and the organization you built. Thank you very much.
Well, we do what we can. So with that, another, enjoyable episode of Voices of the Valley. We're delighted you joined us, and good to hear you're still hard at it, because we don't want to see you disappear from the scene anytime soon. So, Candace,
thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Gino. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis.
All right. Let's do it again next week. Gino, thanks very much. And please congratulate Aubrey as well.
Thanks for listening to the Voices of the Valley podcast, brought to you today by Western Growers Association, supporting producers that grow the best medicine in the world. Find out more at WGA.com.